Hi, I'm Paul Camillos from Shooting the Breeze podcast. Join the STB crew for conversations and stories around women's hoops and women in hoops, inspiring players, amazing coaches, and the legends behind the scenes. It's our seventh season. Drop us a like and review, and make sure to subscribe for early access and other bonus content. Globally, women's hoops is on the rise, with the 3x3 World Cup happening right now in Ulaanbaatar and our Gangaroos hustling hard with a 4-0 run in the group phase. We wanted to take a minute and listen to some of our Series 7 pods through an international lens. We also want to say thanks to STB's growing international listenership who are tuning in to Aussie Women's Hoops. We see you. And don't forget, on the international stage, there's so many Aussies hooping in the WNBA. In just weeks, the Asia Cup tips off in China, along with the FIBA Under-19 World Cup in Czechia. We can't forget the first ever wheelchair 3x3 World Championships in Africa are happening in early August, where the Wombats will travel to South Africa. And in September, we get to see the young up-and-coming ballers in the Under-16 Asia Cup in Malaysia. How good is that? So I'm just curious to hear your opinions on how you've been seeing the WNBL just over the few rounds that we've had so far, and the players, and how you've been seeing the league developing over the last few weeks.
Oh, I love what we're seeing. You know, last year was actually my first year getting into the WNBL. So, you know, really seeing it and really covering it and seeing what it can do, I was like, oh, I have to definitely cover this because this is just a fun league. But in terms of this season, just seeing some of the teams really compete, like Bendigo has been on a tier, you know, like Sydney, which was probably a team that was great, you know, last year, mate, faltering a little bit. But I think that's the beauty of the WNBL, where any team can really have a breakout season. I think last year was, you know, the year of Perth and Southside, whereas, you know, now you're having other teams in the mix this year. In terms of players, we can go with the WNBA imports. I think Leticia Mee here has had a fantastic, you know, first few stretches. I think right now she's on pace to have more points maybe within 6-7 games in the WNBL than she's had for her entire WNBA career. And I think, you know, that can be chalked up to, you know, maybe not getting enough minutes in the rotation, not, you know, being in a position to get enough, maybe the confidence and reps to succeed. But the beauty of overseas play and playing in somewhere in the WNBL is you're getting that luxury, you're getting those reps to really develop your craft, but also play the game that you love. So it's a good thing for players like Amir here. Naz Hillman always, you know, looks great, continuing that stretch she had for Melbourne last year. Always quality in the post. She's had some good games. Sammy Whitcomb continues to look like a flamethrower, just knocking down shots. Another Aussie legend, Sammy Whitcomb, and former New York Liberty. I have to add that in there. Otherwise, you know, Sandy will probably never let me hear the end of it. So. But, you know, she looks great. And then also, I know a player that me and Jacinta are fans of, Shanice Swain. You know, we're all aboard the Swain train. So,
oh, absolutely.
And it's catching on.
And she was absolutely on fire in that game on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I mean, she was the real standout for the Flames in that game in terms of trying to keep the club in touch with Bendigo, particularly because, let's be honest, Sammy was just on fire that game.
Yes, Sammy really was. And, I mean, that's what she's been in the WNBA and WNBL, you know, as a knockdown shooter. But to see Shanice Swain, especially someone on the younger end of the players, you know, really developing – drafted in 2023 to the Sparks, and then there were questions on, you know, like, how can she fare, you know, coming over into WNBA. I know she took the year off to really work with the WNBL and NBL stuff, and, you know, just watching her develop, watching her continue to grow and mature as a player, and you're really seeing it on the floor where she's, you know, she's driving more, she's, you know, taking contact. It's not just the quick trigger three, she's also doing things on the floor to try to help the team win. She's playing with Kayla George, who's also phenomenal. another Aussie legend. I keep throwing Aussie legend around, but, you know, there's so many fantastic players in the WNBL that are doing their thing, so I have to give them credit.
Well, Aussie and legend sometimes go hand in hand, because legend is a very common adjective we use to describe someone we have a lot of admiration and affection for in Australia. So you've got the lingo already under your belt, Al. So Aussie legend is very appropriate.
All right, I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
Absolutely.
And just with Shanice Swain, I think, as you said, she was drafted and then stashed and tried to work on her game while she was still here, but spent a lot of last season injured, so couldn't really get going in the back end of the season. So then had another off season. But what's exciting for us is that we're finally getting to see her back on court after what's been pretty much over 12 months since we saw her healthy and playing, and she's starting. And I think all of that hard work is coming to fruition. I didn't expect her to be so strong so early after having so much time or on the sideline. But, yeah, that quick trigger three, her three-point consistency certainly improved. Yeah, she's definitely being more aggressive on the drive. Just got to, I think, start to improve her court vision and decision-making when she's trying to look for that outlet pass. But a lot of promising things early for the Swain train.
Oh, of course. And, you know, I can't wait. I'm hoping that, you know, we definitely are able to see her in Los Angeles sometime down the road, as that's the team that drafted her, because I think that would be good for her to get that exposure, especially on the next level, and see, you know, where she can compete and where she can be. But definitely a fan of the Swain train. Another player that's been good, that I think has been helpful. I'm looking at Perth, Allie Wilson. You know, she stepped in and has been key at times for them in the absence of Amy Atwell, and hoping to see Amy Atwell back soon. I know she's been injured. Just different players all across the board that, you know, are doing well in the WNBL. Alicia Falling. There's just such a ton of talent that I'm overwhelmed. you kind of hear me glowing, because it's just like I've really become such a big fan of the WNBL and the Australian side of basketball over this year and a half, where I just can't stop talking about it.
Good. Keep talking about it, because
absolutely.
We've known how good it's been for a long time, and slowly through social media and different pathways. And I know that there's a big community growing on Threads, WNBA Threads, and then we're trying to infiltrate that group now with, hey, if you're missing the WNBA, there's plenty of WNBL to watch. You'll love what we've got to offer. But I don't think I've ever asked. I'm interested to know, what was your, I guess, gateway or facilitator to the WNBL? How did you first come across it, and what kind of sparked your interest?
Yeah, so I think, you know, covering the WNBA, you've had players that go overseas to Australia, like Aditi Richards, you know, Sam Wickham's going to go over there. But I was always interested in just finding out, okay, how can I watch these players in the offseason and really see what they're doing? Because, you know, a lot of people sometimes think that, okay, especially here in the States, that once the WNBA season ends, okay, that's it for women's basketball, time for the NBA, and, you know, there's nothing else out there. But I really wanted to find that, and then being able to find out, okay, how can I watch the WNBL? And then last season, knowing that it was streamed for free on the FIBA channel, I was like, okay, this is, you know, beautiful, because now it's not like you have to pay for an extra subscription or anything like that. It's really accessible on YouTube. And, you know, started watching, I think the first game I watched may have been Melbourne versus Southside with Jordan Canada and Nas Hillman versus Lauren Jackson and Nadia Pacha and Maddie Rashi and the crew. And I was like, oh, this is fun. And then I just was hooked, and then watching other games, watching Perth with Ari McDonald last season, and then just, you know, it just became one after the other and compounded, and I was like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, so that's a great plug as well to try and keep things like the WNBL and even all of the international FIBA tournaments as free as possible, because they're all on the FIBA YouTube channel too. And that's how, you know, we're going to slowly become more of the world game than our competitor, that is soccer, main competitor of it, will be in the world game title as soccer, to try and keep it free on YouTube. And then have you started to, I mean, understandably, basketball taking up a lot of time, and there's a lot of basketball content to consume all the time. Have you started to dabble in the New Zealand professional league at all?
I have dabbled here and there. You know, I've heard about it, and I know, I think Jordan Horston, who's WNBA player, is playing over there, and she's been playing pretty well. So I have seen her, like what she's been doing over there. And I think That's just like the beauty of this game and women's basketball increasing, because it's also increasing the profile in other countries to where, you know, New Zealand's basketball league is a hot topic. The WNBL is out there. I saw Whoopi Goldberg, her Women's Sports Network has the new partnership with the WNBL. So where you can have like a known American celebrity, you know, actually investing in the Australian Women's Basketball League, and then seeing other leagues like EuroLeague and EuroCup and other leagues come to the forefront. I think it's just amazing to see that rise of women's basketball on a global stage.
Yeah, it seems to me that there's actually more vocal interest in the women's game than there is vocal interest in the men's game, particularly over the last 12 to 18 months. And it's interesting, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the women's game tends to be a lot more dynamic on the floor in comparison to the men's game. How do you see that?
Yeah, so I think that's interesting. Part you put about it, you know, with it being more dynamic. I've always kind of looked at the women's game as a bit more skillful than the men's game, to where, you know, I feel like you really, I think that's where like the fundamentals shine a lot. And, you know, when you're able to see players that are well-rounded players, I've always had a saying, and I'm not sure like how many people may agree with me, but I've always said to me, women's basketball is basketball in its pure form. And I think that's a lot of people may be kind of catching on to that idea of like, okay, this is, I know the saying in the States is real hoops. So I think, you know, some people are looking at it as, you know, advanced form of the game and just a game that they can really get into without maybe the fluff and filler that you may see in the men's side of things.
Talk us through that silver medal comms game at Birmingham. How did you feel when, you know, you were going through that game and it looked like when you were getting to the point where you knew that it was going to be your game?
I think for us, like, it was such an interesting experience because 3x3 for wheelchair was so new still at that stage. So when we started the process for comm games, like, the rules were still being established and still being changed, and they were still trying to figure out how to apply the FIBA rules to wheelchair basketball. So that first sort of like 4 or 5 months of the process was A, us learning the game, but B, also adjusting to all the rule changes that were coming down. So that was pretty fun. I think comm games was interesting because particularly with England and Scotland, we're used to playing them as a GB unit. So seeing them split up was a bit different. But I think we got off to a really good start in the semi-final against England. And then they sort of started clawing back a bit and we got a bit anxious about it. And, you know, we had to really lock down on the defense and make it as hard as physically possible for them to kind of get anywhere. And again, it was that thing that some of the teams hadn't adapted to everyone playing every role, which then meant that you could target, you know, you could target their ball handler, you could target their big, because they were still playing their traditional role rather than playing an individual role. And I think that's where we succeeded, because all four of us could do a bit of everything and it was fine. And I think that's what made going up against Canada so hard, because they were in a similar position. And obviously, yep, Katie's a phenomenal player and a phenomenal shooter. So trying to get the ball out of her hands was difficult to start. And it is in the 5-on-5 game as well. She's an absolute pest. But she's got same thing. She's got phenomenal lows and mids who can do a bit of both, who can finish, who can ball handle. So much like us, it was really hard to get good defense, because if you wanted to lock down one, you had to give up something else and vice versa. So I was kind of playing the percentages and hoping that they came in our direction.
And, you know, we had the able-bodied Kangaroos there as well, who pulled in a bronze. Did you guys get to sort of cross paths much at all?
Yeah, we did, which was really cool. For us, it was kind of funny because Priyanka, who predominantly works in the wheelchair basketball for Basketball Australia, is actually the manager of the Kangaroos. So we actually got to spend a lot of time, and obviously, like, we were training at similar times. We were on the bus a lot together. We were housed together. So it was really good to actually interact with them, and they came to watch us, we came to watch them. So it was cool to have both us as wombats and them as kangaroos being able to interact and get to know each other. And obviously, like, for them, they'd never seen wheelchair basketball at a high level before, so it was a pretty cool learning experience for them. And yeah, obviously, it was good to get to know them on a personal level as well.
Oh, look, it sounds like it was a real experience where, let's face it, it was still the early days of the 3-on-3 game. You guys were kind of like getting together and, helping each other out. And you kind of, I suppose both teams were feeling out their own way through this whole three-on-three game.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, it was the first time that AblePod had played alongside wheelchair basketball at, like, a major event, and we'd been integrated fully into it, which was a really cool experience. And kind of one of the awesome things about the Comm Games is that the Para and the AblePod runs concurrently. So I think that was really fun. And, yeah, I think it was that. It was a first sort of thing for both of us, with 3x3 being so new. So it was kind of a first Comm Games for all of us, I think. So I think that was probably part of it too, was we were all making our debut at the same time.
And it's going to come back for Glasgow in 26. What's the prep looking like for these games?
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a weird one for us, because it's going to be running at the same time as our World Championships. Like, I think our Worlds are like the month beforehand, and particularly on the women's side, we have a limited number of players. We're not a massive squad, so whoever's going to Worlds is most likely going to Comm Games at the same time. So it'll be a pretty quick turnaround between the two competitions. But I think, yeah, like, we're not really, as weird as it is, we're not really looking at it as a solo thing. Like, it'll be part of our prep. Like, we scrimmage 3-on-3 games at camps and things like that. So, again, we get a different combinations of players together, but you get to put people in those slightly uncomfortable positions in a training camp, so they can get used to, you know, being a ball handler, being a shooter, being whatever we need them to be without the pressure of it actually being a game. I think it will still be used as a development tool for us, and then whoever's sort of feeling the most comfortable and the most confident in that sphere will then go through the Comm Games, I think, is how it'll look. I can't say for sure because I don't know. But
And you've mentioned the world, and this is the first, well, it's coming up, is the first 3-on-3 world champs being played in South Africa. So for you, what are your thoughts about this? How, I mean, obviously it's a positive step forward for wheelchair basketball, but from an athlete's perspective, what are your thoughts about the whole thing?
Again, I think it's such an exciting opportunity for us because, like, outside of our zone qualifiers, Worlds and Paralympics, like, we don't get a lot of opportunities to play internationally. Like, that's for competition. That's not for friendlies or development and things like that. So I think that part, having another international competition on the calendar, is always really exciting. Again, I think the fact that it is in Africa and that there's an opportunity for those developing countries to get a team in, get them international experience, even if they don't necessarily have the team to do 5-on-5, it's building all those countries into it as well, which then obviously makes our sport stronger and bigger and more competitive. So I think it'll be really fun. I think it'll be really interesting to see who each country sends, because obviously, like, in those top teams around the world, they've got multiple lineups that they can send in a 3-on-3 format. So I think it'll be really interesting to see who ends up being named for each team as well.
And you mentioned this, and I really hadn't thought about it. It's the opportunity for African nations to be able to field teams in this, because, I mean, we've had Coach Liz Mills on the show a few times, and one of the things she always keeps saying is that there is an astounding amount of talent in Africa that has just, we know nothing about it and we never see it. And I suppose, you know, the same would have to be the case for wheelchair basketball.
It definitely is, but there's also the extra added barrier of the fact that the healthcare system isn't as good as it is in developed countries. The access to equipment isn't as good as what it is in developed countries. So, like, for Comm Games, Ella Sabeljack actually donated her chair to one of the South African girls straight after the games, and they took it home with them because their one-pointer was literally every time she got hit was falling out of her chair, because her chair was just a basic club chair that didn't fit her and didn't work for her body and her disability. Again, when we get these opportunities and they get to participate and they get to compete, then they get recognition and they get more funding, and then they can develop to get better equipment, better training, better healthcare for themselves. So it's more than just sport. It's that flow and effect that goes back as well to bring them up in the same thing. But, yeah, there's absolutely, like, if you watch the Africa Zone qualifier, like, you can see the talent there, even though, you know, they're not as high executing and high performing, but you can see the athleticism is absolutely present in them. It's just the training and the high performance isn't as high as what it is in the countries that have been playing wheelchair basketball for the last three decades.
Yeah. So it's the talent is there. They just need that development to be able to get themselves up to that level.
Absolutely.
And like Coach Liz says, don't sleep on Africa because they're going to show up and play one day.
That's it. And like we're seeing it even in the Asia Oceania zone for us in the past, I think, I'm going to get this wrong, but like 4 or 5 years, we've gone from having three women's team, which was us, Japan and China, qualifying every year to now having Thailand's coming through, India's coming through, Iran is coming through. Like we've got, you know, at least now every zonal, we've got 6 to 7 teams that are playing on the women's side of things that are developing and they're coming on really strong. Like Thailand the last couple of years has come out of pretty much nowhere to be a real contending team, and Iran as well. And, you know, India and last AOZ, they had a mixed AOZ team for girls who didn't have a country team to play for. But they all got together and they had 3-4 days to train together and they ended up finishing, I think, 5th.
Wow.
So I think that as well, like it's not just the Africa zone, it's our zone as well, being able to develop. And even some of the lesser countries in Europe coming through the 3x3 system with like Bosnia and Herzegovina and Switzerland and a few of those other ones that don't have 5-on-5 teams but are slowly developing their 3x3 teams and building their programs through the 3x3.
You know, talking about camp and how it relates to the Opals, because, you know, before this upcoming WNBA season, obviously training camp will happen with the New York Liberty. And we have some new faces on the team, also bringing back some players when we think of Kennedy Burke, but also, you know, the signings of Isabel Harrison, bringing in Rebecca Gardner, also looking at a chance to see players like Raquel Carrera and Caitlin Davis to see what they can do. And also some new coaching hires. We had Andrew Wade, who is now in Unrivaled, currently with the Lacers, but also Sonia Rahman, previously with the Grizzlies and MIT. You know, just what do you think that says to the Liberty's willingness to not just kind of rest on the laurels, but also looking to, you know, compete and looking to say, no, we want to be at the forefront of competing?
Yeah, I think you've just said it there. Like, I think once you win a championship, you're hungry for another championship, aren't you? I think your biggest mistake you could make is just you think you're going to run it back again. You know, so in the off season, it's, you know, I think Jonathan does a good job. And for me, it's more like, how do we get better on the coaching? How can we provide more for our players? What kind of players can come in and complement the core group that we have? So I think really excited about the hires that we have done with Andrew Wade. He's a great young talent. He's a young guy, but he's an old mind. He's been around the league and our game for so long. So really excited about what he brings and his role as a director of player development. And then Sonia Rahman, I mean, she's had so much experience in the NBA and we thought, well, that's interesting. Let's, you know, we're always stealing off the NBA. So, okay, let's bring someone with that experience and that can add to making us to be better. Now, yeah, we had the ultimate season last year, but there's areas we know we can keep getting better in, and every team is going through that at the moment. So it's exciting. And obviously bringing in some of the, you know, players, obviously Rebecca Gardner was injured last year, excited. She's making good progress. And, you know, I think Maquisha's overseas doing pretty good in China. And, you know, we've lost a few. Obviously Kayla Thornton's always tough to see her go. She's a fan favourite and was so great for us. But excited for her, what she can do at Golden State. But, you know, hopefully, you know, I don't think we're done yet. So we're still putting the pieces together. I think Jonathan's, you know, he's plugging away and seeing what else that we can add so that we can build on what we did last year. And I think the continuity will help that we can, you know, right from day one, how do we keep adding to what we did? Where do we need to get better? And, you know, that's a lot of the discussions we have in the off season with the coaches. And, you know, I'm really excited. I'm having a coaches retreat in Phoenix in a few weeks. So we'll get them in here and we'll work hard and, you know, have a little bit of fun around it. And when we get back to New York, we'll be hit the ground running.
I think that Phoenix retreat will be fun as someone that, you know, went to Phoenix for All-Star. I definitely like the Phoenix weather compared to the cold that Tri-State area can bring. So definitely enjoy that. But you talked about, you know, it's obviously a collaborative effort between the front office and the coaching and in terms of like trying to bring in pieces. And something that I've noticed this offseason amongst the WNBA teams is it seems that teams are casting a wider net for players and coaches in terms of the overseas game, where you're seeing players that were on Olympic teams but also playing for leagues like the French BWL, the WNBL in Australia, playing in Turkey and overseas. What do you think that says to just how the league is transforming to where now teams are actually looking abroad more and more?
Yeah, look, I think it truly is a global game. And when you have an Olympic Games, it allows all these coaches to see the best talent from all over the world, not just for Europe, it's Asia, you know, Australia. So it's pretty special. And I think women's basketball it's played by the most countries. So there's going to be a lot of great players. But I think coaches now, they're not scared of bringing players over that are going to miss time because everyone loves to play for their country. But I think there's a little bit more support now. Like we have European players, they'll leave for Eurobasket and we support them. I mean, I'm an Australian coach, so that probably helps in that regard because it is important. You know, you've got to support them both ways. And I think that's where it's opened up. There's so many great players that we have to support them in their endeavours as well because they're going to help us in the long term as well.
Do you find that when you're getting players coming back from overseas, they're bringing in maybe some different ideas or some different styles of play that you might want to try and integrate into your overall system because there's some new aspect that you might kind of go, hey, I like that. Let's give it a try.
Oh, 100%. The game changes every year. And that's part. And that's why I love I'm very curious, you know, about, okay, why are they doing that? You know, how you watch the NBA, we're all stealing stuff off each other. But, you know, in the game of basketball, how do we create advantages? You know, I talked about pace and space. So it's not how do we create advantages through our cutting, our screening, you know, our spacing. So, you know, the off seasons when we review, okay, that we did that well, but how do we go to another level? And it fascinates me. So that's, you know, we talk about that. I could talk about that forever. But, you know, these players get to experience a different style, a very modern style, how the game is evolving. And we want players that can fit that. And that's why I'm excited about the Opals. I want to, you know, I would like to play that really, you know, we've changed a little bit, you know. We're going to be a little bit more speedy, you know, young. So we can run a little bit more. And so I'm excited about how that is and continue to just grow. How do we create those advantages? Obviously, not just for our drivers and our pick and roll players, but, you know, all for our shooters as well, because I think we have a really good mixture of that, you know, obviously with the Opals and then with New York. And it's just bringing those right players in. How do we get Sabrina more open looks? You know, how do we get Stewie? But the other players improving their games around it will help our best players as well too. So, yeah, it's I like the offseason because it's exciting. And then when you want to put it back together, how do you kind of mold it to, you know, and you're always adapting. You have to have some flexibility. It's the beauty of it. For me, I'm like, we have to empower our players. We give them concepts. How do we make them better decision makers? Because in the end, that's what basketball's about. Like, you don't want them running around like robots. No, you guys have to make a decision when to cut, when to space, when to screen, and knowing, you know, the philosophy of the game. So, it's really exciting, and the game continues to evolve. I think you see that all around the world.
Mm. And you see, like, if we look at this season, the WNBL, we've had Letitia Ammer here over in Perth with Ryan. Shannon's got Nia Coffey. Kennedy's got Veronica Burton down there. And you've been here, and you've watched some of these games. How do you find kind of watching those players, particularly in those other systems, and what sort of things do you look for when you're watching those international players here in Australia and operating within the systems of coaches, some of whom are on your staff?
Yeah. No, look, it's been really fun. Obviously, every coach is going to have their own kind of style, but you see how it evolves even through the season. You know, how they start, because you get to know your players a little bit more, you know, where's their spots and you know, how's it all fit together and then molding it and to make it work. But, you know, I think Bendigo hit the ground running. I mean, yeah, Burton, she impressed me last year. You know, I thought, ooh, okay, she's got a little, you know, defense. But you see this year in the WNBL, she's got this confidence on the offensive side. You know, look, what, last game, not 4 from 6 threes, but her ability to get to the rim and finish. You know, she's picking up full court and being really disruptive. So I think she's added another element to the game, which is, hey, kudos to Golden State, because that's where she's going. She's got an opportunity to really take over on that and it'd be great. And, you know, Emma here hasn't played much in the WNBA. But I think she played in a system that allowed her to have a little bit of freedom. and you see the offensive versatility and the defensive, because I see her out there blocking shots, and you know, it's a really good system, because Perth play a really pro style play. You know what I mean? It's more, you know, it's probably similar to New York, quite honest, with all their movement and creating the spaces. So you see a lot of opportunities for their individual brilliance to shine through. And, you know, a player we didn't talk about is Ali Wilson. I mean, how good is that? I mean, I had Ali in the first 8 years ago. She was in camp but had a few injuries and, you know, didn't make it back there. But the last 2 years she's impressed me so much. So really excited to see her in camp. And, you know, I think 3-3's helped to be a better player. But I think being in Perth has been good for her, because you've got to allow some of those players with flair, Shanice Swain. I mean, you've got to allow them just to play and, you know, learn by doing, and you have all these skills. So don't put them in a box.
Yeah, I mean, both Mary and myself remember Ali when she was playing at the Flames in Sydney when it was Sydney Uni. You could see that the raw talent was there. And I suppose this is where it comes to that bit between the player has to find the right coach, the same as the coach has to find the right player to be able to get the best out of each other.
It's you and me, Alf.
Thank you. We had a bit of a network issue.
What do you think of Ali Wilson, Alf?
No, I've really been impressed with what Ali Wilson is doing with Perth. You know, I think, you know, just to see what her game continues to be, and just that overall Perth team with her, Amy Atwell, and Miha, just seeing what they can do. And, you know, I think that also opens up a good probable question in regards to the coaching, because when you look at coaches like Shannon Sebum, Kennedy Karama, Ryan Petrick, they've been able to sort of tap into some things for some WNBA players that we've seen them have fantastic seasons after playing in the WNBL. One instance I'm thinking of is, like, look how great Ari McDonald looked with Perth last season.
Congratulations for getting the CBA done, because it's obviously a significant achievement for the league, and fan reaction seems to have been really positive so far. I'm just wondering, what sort of feedback have you guys been getting from your own sources?
The feedback has been amazing from, you know, the players, obviously a lot of collaboration with ABPA, the Players Association, and the clubs went into this with the league as well. So really grateful for the collaboration there also. But the excitement from the players has been tremendous. I think two of my favorite calls that I got was one from someone who works at another women's sporting code in Australia, who said, well, thanks a lot, you've made my day really tough, because now my boss said, well, what are we going to do to follow this up? Which is a great thing to hear, because we really do want to pave the way for women's sport in general. And then I think the second one was a call from my dad, where he was like, my gosh, I woke up this morning and saw this news in America. And so the fact that it was such a big deal for female athletes that we made news globally, A, it says there's a lot of work to be done still in this space, but B, I think it shows how historic this deal actually is.
One of the key things for me is not only the size of the increases over the period of the CBA, but also the fact that it's now going to provide clarity for the next 4 years. And to me, it's a really foundational step, and it provides a lot more stability and growth potential for the league. From the perspective of the league and from your perspective, how do you see this is going to help the league grow?
I think, you know, one of the things that I've been vocal about since I came into this role was making sure that we retain a level of elite talent, and that part of that is also keeping our elite athletes here in Australia. And so this agreement directly relates to that, where I see it being 4 years, and also the changes in the salaries as well, as offering those athletes a lot more security than they've had in the past. I mean, imagine having to negotiate those terms annually. Like, that does not offer a lot of security. So 4 years provides a lot of that security, and combined with the changes around wages, I think that also gives the athletes an opportunity to stay in Australia longer. And we know that that is something they want to do. They've expressed that, and they want to play at home. And so I think those two things combined really contribute to that.
You're saying that it's going to help to keep athletes in Australia, but there's also a proportion of athletes, particularly those who are knocking on the Opals door, who need more of that international experience. Do you think it's going to make it a little bit more of a do I, don't I kind of situation for them?
I think so. I mean, again, it's certainly made global news. And I think understanding that they're coming to a country in a league where this is a priority and this is important makes it that much more attractive. I think also, you know, if you look at even Caitlin Clark's salary, like Caitlin Clark's salary is only $100,000 a year. The rest of her income comes from sponsorships. And so I think when you look at someone to you know, her status and her caliber and compare that, like, we are really, again, setting a benchmark globally for what it should look like for female basketball players. And so I think it does make Australia more attractive. I mean, by all accounts, the athletes that come and play in Australia absolutely love playing here. And so I think this can only make the experience even better. But I think, again, that comes down to the wonderful partnership that we have with the WNBA as well. And there's certainly a lot of respect between the leagues around the Australian athletes that we send over to America to play in the WNBA. And similarly, being able to have some WNBA athletes come and play here in Australia.
The other part to that is, how about bringing the potential for being able to attract European talent into Australia? I mean, obviously, it's easier with the WNBA because the seasons work out together well.
Yeah.
How do you see the potential for European talent to come to the league now?
I think there's a lot of opportunity to grow the relationships with both European talent and talent through Asia Pacific. And those are absolutely things that we want to explore, you know, over the next few years. But I think also, you know, the new CBA has a provision for two marquee players, and only a portion of their contracts actually count toward the salary cap. So the first marquee has to be a local, the second could be an import. And so, you know, there's parameters around the level that marquee player needs to be at. But at the same time, I think it does present opportunities for, you know, Europe, Asia Pacific, America, like wherever those athletes come from.
Well, you've mentioned now the marquee player. So that one's really interesting because it's not just a marquee player and there's a percentage of the salary contribution to the cap. There's also a series of qualifying conditions for a marquee player. Yeah. Now, can you run through those with us?
Sure. So some of those include being a high-level WNBA player, a member of the Opals, a member of an all-WNBL first or second team. There's not, at this point in time, you know, specific parameters around Europe or Asia, as you just touched on. But I think, again, like making sure, and the whole point of this is to attract a high level of elite talent in the WNBL and make sure that that's sustainable. And that's really the point of those qualifications.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that one plays out. Tracy, I'm curious, you know, if, and I'm going to put you a bit on the spot here.
Oh, no, you shouldn't do that. No, go ahead.
So if you were standing in front of a room of sports administrators and giving them your opinion on, you know, concepts and ideas to consider when they're looking at their broadcast options, what would you be saying to them?
Look, you know, I'm one of those people who is very keen on looking outside the bubble. And I think part of our problem in Australia is that we're in a bubble anyway. We're so isolated. You know, we don't have other countries rammed up against our border and we're constantly thinking about what's happening over there and we're in competition with them. So our view of competition is pretty limited. But in fact, the way the market is now and the way generations coming through behave now is that it's all one market. You know, you've got the entire world. And if people at a particular age or of, you know, a particular background are searching for something, they'll find it somewhere in the world. And so we need to find ways of being able to tell those stories here and to be able to relate our sports and our competitions to those sorts of stories here. And then, you know, that is as relevant for people overseas as it is in Australia. So don't be afraid of also reaching out to, you know, audiences in other places that just might be interested because there are some fabulous stories. And, you know, big growth areas, you look at where populations are young
like really young. And this is where the Saudis are having such a big influence at the moment. And their whole strategy around investing in sport, you know, people don't listen to the media. The media constantly talks about sports washing. Yeah, okay, what have we done for hundreds of years? You know, what did we use cricket for when England went in and took over India and, you know, built cricket venues everywhere? I mean, what's that? It's just a small part of the story. So the real part of the story is that it's something like 80%, 75 or 80% of the population is under the age of about 36.
Yep.
They have a massive health problem as far as obesity and diabetes. So they've got to get the young people, that the huge part of their population, active. How do you do that? Well, first of all, you get them interested in sport, and then maybe they might want to go and take a jog around the block before they watch their next session of something. But it's all designed as part of their national vision. And so, you know, you've got young Saudi people, you've got young Africans. The African market is a huge market and they love their sports. And if they've got people playing here in our leagues that look like them, my gosh, there's your hook into a massive market. What are we doing? So we've got to look outside the bubble, I think. I think that's the biggest challenge and something that traditionally Australia has not been so good at.
It's interesting you mention that, because we've had Liz Mills, who's coached in Africa, on the show a number of times. And she's always says, don't sleep on Africa. There's a lot going on over there. And as you rightly said, you look at, say, the basketball here in Australia, Sudanese community, very heavily involved. There's a lot of people playing in the leagues. We should be pumping those. Find some way to say, hey, you want to watch? Here, you can watch. And it's an opportunity gone begging, as you've rightly pointed out. The question is, what's the best way for leagues like the NBL and the WNBL and any of the other smaller sports, you know, fencing, not so much netball, because netball really doesn't have a large international community playing in it. But how do you get these smaller sports to be able to broaden their reach? And the only way I can see it is either get those games and pump them out on YouTube somehow without upsetting your broadcast partner, or have your own capability to be able to put those games out. So the question on that one is, how do you try and achieve something like that?
There's people paid big money to find the answers to those questions. I'm not going to give my IP away for free. You can contact me at... No. What do you think, Lance?
it's interesting. I think, if we put it straight in the context of the WNBL and the way that they've tried to push the game through Whoopi Goldberg's AWSN network, I think, you know, just that awareness and pushing the footprint out there is a great thing, a great foundation to build off. Tracy's point about the, you know, the whole Saudi piece and what they're looking at, certainly, you know, in my role as GM of ESPN up in Southeast Asia, we looked at the data and saw that Same deal for Southeast Asia. There is such a big young population to target, and that's right on our doorstep here in Australia. So I think, you know, the point that Tracy makes about looking outside the bubble, I mean, Indonesia, our nearest neighbour, you know, they've got the fourth biggest population in the world. It's certainly one that can't be ignored and one that we've got to work out how we can tap into. Obviously, you know, some of the measures that we use in Australia, which is usually ARPUs and average revenue per user, et cetera, those numbers don't register so well in these countries. So we've got to think about it a whole other way and how we engage those audiences. So, yeah, huge opportunity. But this young audience, the things that they want, that experience, and they will consume the right storytelling if you hit them in the right areas.
And I think there's just one word of warning also, because I remember when we lived in China for a long time, we lived in the Middle East as well, and became very aware of what pitches sounded like. when Aussies came in to try and attract business. And it was sort of like, we got this great thing and you'll pay this. And it was like, hang on, no, we've got this huge population that you need. So let's understand each other a bit better before you start telling us what's best for us. And I think, you know, if there was one sort of caution I would issue, it would be that, you know, that it's got to be a kind of a partnership arrangement. And again, it just comes from us being isolated. You know, we don't sort of have those discussions, whereas people that live in these hot zones where there's other countries that see things differently right on your border, you have to understand them. Otherwise, you're just going to be in conflict all the time. So, you know, that would be my sort of starting position. There you go. Some free advice for any sports looking into these other markets is to sort of go in and ask them, what's going to work for you? What's going to work for your population, and how can we make our product fit that?
So important, that cultural piece. Just get into the culture and understand the culture. I mean, if you're looking at Southeast Asia, we, in a basketball context, the Philippines is just such massive opportunity for both, you know, NBL and the WNBL. And I think, you know, that's not lost on Larry and some of the sort of power brokers around. They've tried to, and they're still trying to do some things that might work in terms of bringing those markets together. But again, population of 100 million plus people, basketball is the number one sport by a country mile. And it's a bit of a different one to the rest of Asia, which, you know, pretty much football is the dominant, soccer is the dominant sort of sport across most of Asia, give or take some baseball in Japan and Korea and stuff like that. But yeah, I think that understanding that cultural piece well before you get in that room and asking for a fat check is absolutely vital.
It's interesting that you talk about the cultural awareness and even the awareness of sports that people are interested in different countries, because a while back we spoke with Tracy York when she was coaching the Malaysian national women's basketball team, and the number of people we spoke to who would go, Malaysia's got a national women's basketball team? It's like, well, yeah, they do. Okay, they're not there yet, but why would they not have one? And also with Singapore, particularly with the 3x3 basketball, if you watch when it's being televised from Singapore and even just recently in Chengdu, there's a lot of people in those stands. So there's an audience. It's how do you package up what your product to be able to promote it to that audience? And I think, as we've said, because Australia lives in a bubble, we tend to think having four guys sit around a table yelling at clouds tends to be the right approach. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you get our latest pod, and we really appreciate if we could get a like and a review so we can extend the reach to more listeners. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.